And we finished chapter 5, but I wanted to just quickly remind you of what we saw there. In chapter 5, you know, they were working on the wall and they got to this place. You know, they were getting a lot of pressure from the outside to try to stop the building. And they kept together and they were doing it and they were carrying their weapons and everything and sleeping in safe places and had guards round the clock. And then in chapter 5, the people had a disagreement. Some people had money and they were loaning money to other people and charging them interest. Usury, it's called in the King James Version. And we looked at the Old Testament law and it said that Jews were not allowed to charge usury when they lent money to other Jews or Israelites. They could charge usury to strangers or Gentiles. So they worked that out. And then Nehemiah was the governor. He was appointed governor. And then he was taking care of people and he wasn't taking pay. He wasn't charging the people a tax to support himself. He was supporting himself. And not only that, he was feeding people at his table. So that's kind of where we left off. And at the end, he prays and thanks God for helping him. And chapter 6, we begin. Now, it came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem, the Arabian, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had builded the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates. You remember these three guys, Sanballat, Tobiah, and the other guy, the Arabian, and they were from the outside and they didn't want the walls to be built. They didn't want the Jews there. It was cutting into their business, I guess, or whatever. They didn't want them there and they were trying to discourage them, trying to harass them, trying to stop them from building. That Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying, come, let us meet together in some one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. What they meant to do was to hurt him, capture him, kill him, do some kind of evil to him. And I sent messengers unto them saying, I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and come down to you? Yet they sent unto me 4 times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. So they persisted, you know, they just were trying to do anything to get Nehemiah away. Then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in like manner the 5th time with an open letter in his hand. What's an open letter? An open letter means it was unsealed and anybody could open it and read it, okay? Which was his intention, to let other people read what it said. Wherein was written, it is reported among the heathen, and Gashmu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king, according to these words. And thou hast also appointed prophets to preach of thee at Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah, and now shall it be reported to the king according to these words. Come now, therefore, and let us take counsel together. So this letter is accusing Nehemiah of setting up his own kingdom in Judah and in Jerusalem and causing problems, which would be, you know, a form of treachery and being traitorous, because he was there as a representative of the king, right? Cyrus. That's who sent him. Was it Cyrus that sent him? Yeah, I think so. Or Darius, one of them. Anyway, I can't remember. The king of Persia, the big Mahatma, the guy that was in charge of everything. Then I sent him, verse 8, saying, there are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine own heart. For they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work that it be not done. Now, therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. So what were they trying to do? They were trying to make him afraid. You know, he made all this stuff up. It was a lie, but it was calculated to cause division, cause problems, to stop the work. They made us afraid. That was the attempt. They wanted to slow down the work on the walls. Quite a deal. And what does Nehemiah do? He goes, oh God, strengthen my hands. He goes to God. He asks God for strength. Afterward, I came unto the house of Shemaiah, the son of Delaiah, the son of Mehetabel, who was shut up. Means he was on house arrest to be shut up. Doesn't mean he wasn't talking. And he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us shut the doors of the temple, for they will come to slay thee. Yea, in the night will they come to slay thee. This is Shemaiah saying this, right? He's saying this to Nehemiah. And I said, should such a man as I flee? And who is there that, being as I am, would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. He's saying, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to go hide in the temple. I'm not going to do it. And lo, I perceived that God had not sent him, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me, for Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. They bribed him. They gave him money to do this, to lure Nehemiah into the temple. I guess they had some way they were going to maybe trap him or do something. And this guy was a false prophet. He had made himself out to be Nehemiah's friend, but in reality, he was his enemy. And he perceived. Well, he perceived because what? God told him. God was watching over Nehemiah, and he gave him revelation, showed him that this guy was not on the up and up. Therefore was he hired, that I should be afraid and do so and sin, and that they might have matter for an evil report, and that they might reproach me. You know, they might badmouth me. They might have a reason to report me. My God, think thou upon Tobiah and Sanballat according to these their works, and on the prophetess Noadiah and the rest of the prophets that would have put me in fear. You know, would have made me afraid. They all wanted to frighten me. So, and he gives a list of these people. We don't even know who this Noadiah was, but it was a prophetess, a woman. And that says, and all the other of these prophets. So are they real prophets? Well, no, they're false prophets. They're prophets that are going against the will of God, not with the will of God. They're not speaking for God. They're speaking for a God, or, you know, their gods. So, verse 15, the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month of Elul, in 52 days. So what did they do? They built that whole wall around Jerusalem in 52 days. You know, and they started out with rubble. You know, it was all just broken down stones. And they worked probably really long hours. They didn't have any machinery. They did it all by hand. And half the time they were, you know, working with a hand on their sword or their spear and using the other hand to do something else. Or they were guarding, you know, and it wasn't an easy task. But God helped them, and they did it in 52 days. Pretty amazing. That would be in the category maybe of a miracle. I don't know.
We can't get our streets done.
I was
Yeah, we can't get our streets fixed down the block. They've been working on them for 5 years, and it's still a mess.
It'll be 20 more years.
Oh, well. So, 52 days. Verse 16, it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things, that they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. It was a witness, and it glorified God because they got the work done against all odds, against, you know, nobody could have imagined that they could have got this done that fast or gotten it done at all, because, you know, they had everything going against them. They had people going against them. They had inner division. And Nehemiah just continued to lead. He continued to pray. He was an example to the people, and he listened to God. He was obedient to God. And when you're obedient to God, things go right. Verse 17, moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came unto them. For there were many in Judah sworn unto him, unto Tobiah, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Arah, and his son Johanan had taken the daughter of Milshalom, the son of Berechiah, whoever those guys are. Also, they reported his good deeds before me and uttered my words to him. And Tobiah sent letters to put me in fear. Again, you know, fear, right? Who gives fear? Who's the man of fear? It's the devil, right? God has not given us this power of fear. But fear comes from the devil. It's a negative thing. And this is what happens. God bless you. So Nehemiah shows no fear, but they tried to put it on him. They tried to put him in fear. Okay, now we go to chapter 7. I'm not going to read all of it because you'll see in a second. Verse 1, now it came to pass when the wall was built, and I had set up the doors and the porters and the singers and the Levites were appointed, that I gave my brother Hanani, and Hananiah, the ruler over the palace, charge of over Jerusalem, for he was a faithful man and feared God above many. And I said unto them, let not the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun be hot. And while they stand by, let them shut the doors and bar them, and appoint watches of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, every one in his watch, and every one to be over against his house. Now the city was large and great, but the people were few therein, and the houses were not builded. See, they hadn't really built their houses yet. Remember, in Ezra, when they built the temple, they had built their houses, and then they stopped building the temple. So this all happened before the building of the temple, right? now, it's, okay. And my God put into my heart to gather together the nobles and the rulers and the people, that they might be reckoned by genealogy. And I found a register of the genealogy of them which came up at the first and found written therein. And these are the children of the province that went up out of captivity, of those that had been carried away from Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away and came again to Jerusalem and to Judah, everyone into a city. And then it gives you all these names from verse 7 all the way to, or verse 8, all the way to verse 65. So we're not going to read all those names. Because first of all, I won't be able to pronounce them all. And second of all, it'll be really boring and, you know. But that's a listing of the people that had returned. In verse 66. It says, the whole congregation together was 42,303. So although it says the number of people were few in the city, there's still quite a few people, 42,360. Beside their manservants and their maidservants, of whom there were 7,337. And they had 245 singing men and singing women. That was good to know. A choir, yeah. Their horses, 736. Their mules, 245. Their camels, 435. 6,720 asses. Wow, that's a lot of asses. And some of the chief of the fathers gave unto the work. The Tirshatha gave to the treasurer 1,000 drams of gold, 50 basins, 50 hundred, and 30 priest garments. Tirshatha is the governor. And some of the chief of the fathers, that would have been Nehemiah, by the way, and some of the chief fathers gave to the treasurer of the work 20,000 drams of gold, 2,200 pounds of silver, and that which the rest of the people gave was 20,000 drams of gold and 2,000 pounds of silver and 67 priest garments. So the priests and the Levites and the porters and the singers and some of the people and the Nethinims and all Israel dwelt in their cities. And when the seventh month came, the children of Israel were in their cities. The Nethinims were temple. They were servants in the temple, but they were originally, if you remember back when Joshua came into the promised land, that group of people, and they faked that they had come there many miles and you know, they didn't want to get conquered by Joshua and wiped out. So they said, you know, we came here because we heard of your God, and they wore old clothes and beat up stuff. And so Joshua welcomed them in, and they said, we will be your servants forever. So that's, and then David appointed them to be servants in the temple. That's who the Nethinims are. So, so the seventh month, that's when it was. So that's that. Now we're going to go back to Ezra, chapter 7. Verse 1. And this gives us the lineage of Ezra. Now, after these things in the reign of Artaxerxes, see, up to chapter 7, Ezra is not there, right? Zerubbabel came, and Nehemiah came. Nehemiah built the walls, and then Zerubbabel came, and he started work on the temple, and then they stopped, and then Haggai and Zechariah came and said, hey, what are you doing? And so they started again, and they finished the temple, and then Ezra comes, and this is the record of Ezra. Now, after these things in the reign of Artaxerxes, king of Persia — Artaxerxes is a title, means the great king or whatever — king of Persia, Ezra the son of Seraiah, the son of Azariah, the son of Hilkiah, the son of Shalom, the son of Zadok, the son of Ahadub, the son of Amariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Merariath, the son of Zerahiah, the son of Uzi, the son of Buki, the son of Abishua, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the chief priest. So he's in the line of Aaron. He's in the line of the high priest. Okay? So he has a very good lineage. That's Ezra. This Ezra went up from Babylon, and he was a ready scribe in the law of Moses, which the Lord God of Israel had given. And the king granted him all his request according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him. So a ready scribe means he was really skillful in the law of Moses. Remember, I don't know, a while back we looked at scribes. And we don't really know the origins of scribes, but probably they were Levites originally. Then as it developed later on, they became kind of institutionalized, and they were like almost like a political party. So when we get to the time of Christ, you know, it talks about the scribes and Pharisees, and they weren't really helpful to Jesus Christ at all. And if you remember the one place where it says the lawyer asked him, what is the great commandment? Well, a lawyer would have been probably a scribe because they were experts in the law and they were called lawyers as well as scribes. So they didn't just copy manuscripts, but rather they studied the manuscripts and the laws, and they were supposed to be experts in the Mosaic law. Whether they were or not probably is another story, especially after this point in time, because as it comes down in history, you know, then the Pharisaic and rabbinical movement took place. And instead of just the law, they wrote all their commentaries and their traditions, which became more important than the law itself. That's why when Jesus Christ would heal somebody on the Sabbath, they would condemn him and say, you're not supposed to do any work on the Sabbath. And obviously the word doesn't say that. It says you're not supposed to do any menial work. But what you could do on the Sabbath day was the Lord's work. And that's what Jesus Christ was doing. So they wrongly accused him of that. You can look that up in Isaiah if you'd like. So Ezra went up from Babylon, verse 6, and he was a ready scribe. He was skillful in the law of Moses, which the Lord God of Israel had given. And the king granted him all his requests. Everything that he asked for the journey, everything that he wanted, Artaxerxes says, sure, you got it, Ezra, whatever you need. You got, take my credit card, take my bills, you know, my credit, whatever you need, you got it. And the king granted him all his requests according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him. You know, God was with Ezra, blessing him, and he worked in the king to give him what he wanted. And there went up some of the children of Israel, and of the priests, and the Levites, and the singers, and the porters, and the Nethinims, unto Jerusalem in the 7th year of Artaxerxes the king. And he came to Jerusalem in the 5th month, which was in the 7th year of the king. So, let's see. So it was about a 4-month journey. If you go directly across, it's probably, I measured on a map, which you never know how accurate those maps are. And they give you a little thing, they say 100 miles. And it looked like it was about 800 miles straight across the wilderness. But they would have probably gone around, up around along the Euphrates River and then down through Damascus and then down to Jerusalem, which would have added another 400 or 500 miles to the journey. So it took a while, 4 months, which is probably pretty average for that time. Verse 9, for upon the first day of the first month began he to go from Babylon, and on the first day of the 5th month came he to Jerusalem, according to the good hand his God upon him. So, you know, that's the 4-month journey thereabouts. For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord, to do it and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments. And that's a great verse. And the word prepared is an interesting word. It's a good word in the Old Testament to just, you know, do a little study on. But it means to be established, fixed, firm, prepared in the very broadest sense. You know, in a very broad sense, it's to be prepared. The NIV translates this verse, for Ezra had devoted himself to the study and observance of the law of the Lord and in teaching its decrees and laws in Israel. And the ESV translated it, for Ezra had set his heart to study the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach his statutes and rules in Israel. So any way you look at it, he worked hard, he was diligent with the word, and he his heart was, you know, to teach it, to do it, and to live it. He was a great man. So, and he was a scribe and he was a priest. He was a ready scribe and he was of the line of Aaron. So there's a lot going for him here. Now, this is the copy of the letter that the king Artaxerxes gave unto Ezra the priest, the scribe, even a scribe of the words of the commandments of the Lord and of his statutes to Israel. Artaxerxes, king of kings, unto Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of God of heaven, perfect peace, and at such a time. And remember, we said here it's, you know, it's a time where the temple had been torn down and there was no Holy of Holies yet. So it refers to God not as the God in Israel or the God talked about that was in the Holy of Holies, but the God of heaven. Okay? Verse 13, I make a decree that all they of the people of Israel and of his priests and Levites in my realm, which are minded to their own free will to go up to Jerusalem, go with thee. So this is pretty cool. Artaxerxes gives the freedom. These people were taken into captivity. They've been living in this empire, originally Babylon, the Babylonian Empire. Now it's the Mede-Persian Empire, or the Persian-Median Empire. And they've been there for 70 years. And now Artaxerxes says, well, anybody who wants to go back with Ezra, you have the free will to choose, which is, for that time, is a pretty amazing thing to have happen. They just didn't, you know, give people freedom to do what they wanted. For as much as thou art sent of the king and of his seven counselors to inquire concerning Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of thy God which is in thine hand, and to carry the silver and gold which the king and his counselors have freely offered unto the God of Israel, whose habitation is in Jerusalem. That's pretty wild. Yeah, it's just his counselors, they freely have offered to God. They're giving to God. And all the silver and gold that thou canst find in all the provinces of Babylon with the free will offering of the people and of the priests offering willingly for the house of their God, which is in Jerusalem. That thou mayest buy speedily with this money bullocks, rams, lambs, with their meat offerings and their drink offerings, and offer them upon the altar of the house of your God, which is in Jerusalem. And whatsoever shall seem good to thee and to thy brethren to do with the rest of the silver and the gold, that do after the will of your God. So he says, okay, you got this stuff. I want you to buy the animals for sacrifice, all the things you need for the journey. And then if you have leftover, you do according to the will of God. That's pretty good, isn't it? He didn't say, just do whatever you want. No. He says, do according to the will of God, which is at Jerusalem. The vessels also that are given thee for the service of the house of God, those deliver thou before the God of Jerusalem. And whatsoever more shall be needful for the house of thy God, which thou shalt have occasion to bestow, bestow it out of the king's treasure house. And if you need any more, you just take it from the treasury. Whatever you need, I'll take care of it for you. This is like, you know, like in Ephesians 3:20, exceeding abundantly above all you could ask or think, right? Just over the top. And I, even I, Artaxerxes, the king, do make a decree to all the treasurers which are beyond the river, that whatsoever Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of God of heaven, shall require of you, it be done how? Speedily. Speedily. You do it quick. No questions asked. Just do it. unto 100 talents of silver, and to 100 measures of wheat, and to 100 baths of wine, and to 100 baths of oil, salt without prescribing how much, whatsoever is, and salt in the Middle East was precious, almost like as valuable as money. They needed salt, and salt was just, you know, very, very valuable. Whatsoever is commanded by the God of heaven, let it be diligently done for the house of the God of heaven. For why should there be wrath against the realm of the king and his sons? He said, I don't want anything to come back on me. Let's get it done. Also, we certify you that touching any of the priests and Levites, singers, porters, Nethinims, or ministers of this house of God, it shall not be lawful to impose toil, tribute, or custom upon them. Wow, so all these guys get a free ride, tax-free, no tolls, no customs, no charges, nothing. And now, Ezra, after the wisdom of thy God that is in thine hand, set magistrates and judges, which may judge all the people that are beyond the river, all such as know the laws of thy God, and teach ye them that know them not. So he says, okay, and then I want you to go out there and I want you to teach them about your God. How great is that? How much did God bless Ezra? I mean, Ezra couldn't have asked for anything more. You know, just it's beyond what he could have even prayed for, I'm sure. And whatsoever will not do the law of thy God and the law of the king, let judgment be executed speedily upon him, whether it be unto death or to banishment or to confiscation of goods or to imprisonment. Whatever gets in your way, you know, he's going to pay a price. Blessed be the Lord God of our fathers, which hath put such a thing as this in the king's heart. This is Ezra speaking. Blessed be the Lord God of our fathers, which hath put this thing, such a thing as this in the king's heart to beautify the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem, and hath extended mercy unto me before the king and his counselors and before all the king's mighty princes. And I was strengthened that the hand of the Lord my God was upon me, and I gathered together out of Israel chief men to go up with me. So what a great thing, huh? What a great record. So the king, you know, gives him a free pass. He just gives him everything. He gives him whatever he needs and more. And if he needs more, he can go to the king's treasury. And nobody's going to be able to stop him. Nobody's going to be able to say any different. And he has the king's full backing. So, chapter 8. Now, verses 1 through 14 is again a list. So it says in verse 1, these are now the chief of their fathers, and this is the genealogy of them that went up with me from Babylon in the reign of Artaxerxes the king. And then it gives all these different names. Then we get to verse 15. And I gathered them, unless you want to read all these names. I don't think so. And I gathered them together to the river that runneth to Ahava. And there abode we in tents 3 days. And I viewed the people and the priests and found there none of the sons of Levi. Wow, what's going on here? The sons of Levi are slack. Then I sent for Eleazar, for Ariel, for Shemaiah, and for Elnathan, and for Jarib, for Elnathan, and for Nathan, and for Zechariah, and for Meshulam, chief men also for Joiarib, and for Elnathan, men of understanding. And I sent them with commandment unto Edo, chief at the place of Casaphia, and told them what they should say unto Edo and to his brethren, the Nethinims, at the place of Casaphia, that they should bring unto us ministers for the house of our God. And Nethinims, again, were the temple servants. You know, they were the janitors and, you know, and the guys that carried the water and, you know, whatever, you know, menial work had to be done, the cleanup crew, all that stuff, you know. And, of course, when they did all those sacrifices, there was a lot of cleanup. And poopy animals, they had to store, you know, they had animals, they had stalls and places where they kept the animals and all that stuff. That's what the Nethinims did. Okay. So, verse 18. And by the good hand of our God upon us, they brought us a man of understanding of the sons of Mahli, the son of Levi, the son of Israel, and Shabiah with his sons and his brethren, 18. So, he brings all those guys. Let's jump down to verse 22. Verse 21. Then I proclaimed the fast there at the river Ahava, that we might afflict ourselves before our God to seek him a right way for us and for our little ones and for all our substance. So what's he saying here? He proclaimed the fast. They were going to take time to pray. They were going to take time to be quiet with God. And to be thankful to him and to do things the right way according to how God would want them to do it. It wasn't just like, okay, let's go. And, you know, they didn't just go helter-skelter. They did what they were supposed to do, carefully, thoughtfully, looking for God's guidance. Verse 22, for I was ashamed to require of the king a band of soldiers and horsemen to help us against the enemy in the way, because we had spoken unto the king, saying, the hand of our God is upon all them for good that seek him. But his power and his wrath is against all them that forsake him. So what is he telling you? When he went to the king and I guess he made the request on what to do, because it says the king gave him all his requests, right? One of the things he said was the king probably offered him help and protection for the trip. And he said, well, God will take care of us. So he was, you know, saying to these people, we're going to pray and we're going to get God's protection here, because we're not going to take that protection, because God's going to do what I said he would do for us. So, then I proclaimed the fast there at the river, blah, blah, blah. Okay, verse 23. So we fasted and besought our God for this, and he was entreated of us. He heard our prayer. Then I separated 12 of the chief priests of Sherebiah, Hashabiah, and 10 of their brethren with them, and weighed unto them the silver and the gold and the vessels, even the offering of the house of our God, which the king and his counselors and the lords and all Israel there present had offered. Okay. Just making sure I didn't skip something here. Okay, I'm sorry. Verse 22, I didn't finish that, did I? It says, for I was ashamed to require the king a band of soldiers and horsemen to help us against the enemy in the way, because we had spoken unto the king, saying, the hand of God is upon all them for good that seek him, but his power and his wrath is against all them that forsake him. No, I didn't. So we fasted. Okay, I separated them. Okay, and then they had all these gold in verse 25, the silver and the gold and the vessels and the offering for the house for our God, which the king and his counsels and the lords and all Israel there present had offered. I even weighed unto their hands 650 talents of silver and silver vessels and 100 talents and of gold and 100 talents. Okay, they're carrying a great treasure. Yeah. You know, and you could imagine that there were people out there that would want to attack them and get all that moolah, right? Verse 27, Also, 20 basins of gold of 1,000 drams, and 2 vessels of fine copper, precious as gold. And I said unto them, ye are holy unto the Lord. The vessels are holy also, and the silver and gold are freewill offering unto the Lord God of your fathers. Watch ye and keep them until ye weigh them before the chief of priests and Levites, and the chief of the fathers of Jerusalem at fathers of Israel at Jerusalem, in the chambers of the house of the Lord. So took the priests and the Levites the weight of silver and the gold and the vessels to bring them to Jerusalem unto the house of our God. Something, huh? Then we departed from the river Ahava on the 12th day of the first month to go to Jerusalem, and the hand of our God was upon us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and of such as lay in wait by the way. So there were people that were waiting for him that were going to attack him. You know, they were there and they waited for him and God delivered them. Not the army, but God. And we came to Jerusalem and abode there 3 days. So they made that long trip and they made it without incident because God took care of them. Now on the 4th day was the silver and the gold and the vessels weighed in the house of the God by the hand of Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the priest, and with him was Eleazar, the son of Phinehas, and with them was Jozabad, the son of Jeshua, and Noadiah, the son of Benunai, the Levites, and Levites, by number and by weight of everyone, and all the weight was written at the time. Also the children of those that had been carried away, which were come out of the captivity, offered burnt offerings unto the God of Israel, 12 bullocks for all of Israel, 90 and 6 rams, 70 and 7 lambs, 12 he-goats for a sin offering, and all this a burnt offering unto the Lord. And they delivered the king's commissions unto the king's lieutenants and to the governors on this side of the river, and they furthered the people and the house of God. Wow, how about that? What a great record. God just took care of him. And Ezra did what he was told. He prayed. He looked to God. God was his sufficiency and his strength. He trusted God. He put God first in everything he did. And everything worked out the way it was supposed to. All right, we'll do chapter 9. And I think we'll be done. Verse 1. Now when these things were done, the princes came to me, saying, the people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the people of the lands, doing according to their abominations, even of the Canaanites, Hittites, Perizzites, Jebusites, Ammonites, Moabites, and Egyptians, and the Amorites. So what did they do? They were mixing with the unbelievers, the Gentiles. They haven't separated themselves or from their gods. And that means their abominations, right? False gods and their crazy things they did. For they have taken their daughters for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy seed have mingled themselves with the people of those lands. Yea, the hand of the princes and rulers have been chief in this trespass. The rulers and the princes, the leaders, were part of this problem. And when I heard this thing, I rent my garment and my mantle, plucked off the hair of my head and of my beard, and sat down astonished. He was shaken right to the core because of what they had done. And when it says he rent his garment, he ripped his garment, and he plucked the hair off his head and his beard, means he was in great mourning and pain and sorrow. There were assembled unto me everyone that trembled at the words of the God of Israel because of the transgression of those that had been carried away, and I sat astonished until the evening sacrifice. So the word transgression there is a word that means defection. Now, if we were to go to Exodus 34, Exodus Exodus 34 in chapter, verse 12. This is the law and what it says. Take heed to thyself, lest thou make covenant with the inhabitants of the land whither thou goest, lest it be for a snare in the midst of thee. This is, you know, when they're in the wilderness and God starts to give the law to Moses and he says, you know, beware of the inhabitants of this land. But ye shall destroy their altars, break their images, and cut down their groves. For thou shalt worship no other god, for the Lord whose name is jealous is a jealous God. Lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they go a-whoring after their gods and do sacrifice unto their gods, and one call thee, and thou eat of his sacrifice. And thou take of their daughters and of their sons, and their daughters go a-whoring after their gods, and make thy sons go whoring after their gods. Thou shalt make thee no molten gods, and so on. So it was forbidden. See? It was very clearly forbidden. It also says the same thing in Deuteronomy 7. You can look that up on your own. Back to Ezra chapter 9. Verse 6. And I said, O my God, I am ashamed and blush to lift up my face to thee, my God. For our iniquities are increased over our head, and our trespasses grown up unto the heavens. Boom. He is ashamed of what they've done. And he includes himself, right? He's one of the people. And he's making intercession, which is what men of God do. They make intercession for the people. And so here he's making intercession. So he did it, and he sat there till the evening sacrifice. And at the evening sacrifice, I arose from my heaviness, and having rent my garment and my mantle, I fell upon my knees and spread out my hands unto the Lord my God, and said, O my God, I am ashamed and blush to lift my face to thee, my God, for our iniquities are increased over our head, and our trespass is grown up unto the heavens. Since the day of our fathers have we been in great trespass unto this day, and for our iniquities have we, our kings, our priests, been delivered unto the hand of kings and of the lands, to the sword, to the captivity, and to a spoil, and to confusion of face, as it is this day. And now for a little space, grace hath been showed from the Lord our God to leave us a remnant to escape, and give us a nail in his holy place, that our God may lighten our eyes and give us a little reviving in our bondage. He's going, you know, we got this second opportunity, and the people that came here are mixing with the other people. And he said, you know, and then it says that word there, and to give us a nail in the holy place. That's some kind of idiom. It means you gave us a permanent home. You know, a holy place. God's holy place is permanent, right? And he said, we have a place there, a nail. It's like a peg on the wall. Verse 9, for we were bondmen, yet our God hath not forsaken us in our bondage, but hath extended mercy unto us in the sight of the kings of Persia to give us a reviving, to set up the house of our God and to repair the desolation thereof, and to give us a wall in Judah and in Jerusalem. And now, our God, what shall we say after this? For we have forsaken thy commandments. You did all this for us, and we've screwed it up again. Which thou hast commanded by thy servants the prophets, saying, the land unto which you go to possess it is an unclean land, with the filthiness of the people of the lands, with their abominations, which have filled it from one end to another with uncleanness. And if, you know, you read about all those different groups and their laws and their gods and their practices and their cultures, it was, you know, pretty messed up. Now therefore give not your daughters unto their sons, neither take their daughters unto your sons, nor seek their peace or their wealth forever, that ye may be strong and eat the good of the land, and leave it for the inheritance to your children forever. And after all that has come upon us for our evil deeds and for our great trespass, seeing that our God has punished us less than our iniquities deserve and has given us such deliverance as this. He says, you know, God, for all the stuff we did, we didn't get what we deserved. And then he got us and brought us back, and look what happened. Should we again break thy commandments and join in affinity with the people of these abominations? Wouldest not thou be angry with us till thou hadst consumed us so that there should be no remnant nor escaping? O Lord God of Israel, thou art righteous, for we remain yet escaped as it is this day. Behold, we are before thee in our trespass, for we cannot stand before thee because of this. And, well, let's read the beginning of 10. Now when Ezra had prayed, and when he had confessed weeping and casting himself down before the house of God, there assembled unto him out of Israel a very great congregation of men and women and children, for the people wept very sore. And then that's where we'll stop, because it'll take too long to go on. But it's amazing what he did, right? They got punished for what they did from turning away from God. And then God, you know, lets them go into captivity. But the captivity was, it wasn't like Egypt where they were in bondage. They settled in Babylon and Persia, and they had homes, and they had, you know, they had some wealth. They were allowed to conduct their lives and their business and continue to worship their God if they did, which, you know, some did, some didn't. And then Nehemiah gets to go back and build the wall, and the other guys go back and get to build the temple, and Ezra goes back to set everything straight spiritually. And the miracle of how he got there and how God gave him everything he needed for the temple and how he protected him in the long journey. And then he gets there, and what are they doing? They're screwing around with the Gentiles. And then he goes to God and prays for him and makes intercession because he's that man of God. And he loves God. And his job is to teach them, right? That's what the king told him. He's to teach the people the law and get them to obey it. So that's where we're going to end tonight.